Welcome back to the show. And 2019 marks a major anniversary in the history of the National FFA. It was 50 years ago this year that the landmark vote was taken, allowing the full female membership in the organization. And now, 5 decades later, women are an integral part, an indispensable part of FFA, from the local level all the way to the national officer team, half of which is female. Now we hear about where that journey first began and the long path it took to where we are today.
Women have always played a vital role in agricultural life. We work shoulder to shoulder and hand in hand with our fathers and brothers, our husbands and sons, and our friends and colleagues to plant and harvest crops, tend livestock, and make some of the greatest agricultural advancements of our time. But it wasn't until 1969 that women were officially and finally granted membership in the National FFA organization. 50 years later, the story of the long and important effort to allow women in FFA is worth telling. It's also the perfect time to celebrate the wonderful and numerous accomplishments of female FFA members to demonstrate the importance of equity and inclusion of all.
There are also women who are early believers in agricultural education. Among them, and one of the most notable, was Charlotte Ware.
When she got married in 1895, she was given a Jersey heifer for a marriage gift, and she developed a Jersey herd, and in 1909, she started a school in Massachusetts to train women to be dairy farmers. And then later on, she became very active in promoting high school agricultural education and was primarily responsible for establishing the Norfolk Agricultural School there in Massachusetts. So women have been involved since the get-go in agriculture. Then the question is how about FFA and agricultural education?
Rufus Stimson, who introduced the revolutionary idea of experiential learning outside of the classroom, was an early proponent of women in agricultural education.
And as I researched Rufus Stimson, I found that he was an advocate for having females in agriculture back in the early 1900s. Whenever you do historical research, one item leads to another item, which leads to another item.
The Smith-Hughes Act of 1917 provided federal funds to teach agriculture. While there weren't a lot of young women in agriculture classes at the time, there were some. And nowhere was it more evident than in Massachusetts.
The state supervisor of agriculture in Massachusetts in 1922 said, "Year after year, girls have demonstrated they can profit from our vocational agricultural education. Under such circumstances, we must, of course, agree that there can be no discrimination as to sex and our entrance privileges."
Future Farmers of America was established in 1928. The first National FFA convention was held in Kansas City, Missouri, with 33 delegates from 18 states in attendance. Leslie Applegate from New Jersey was elected the first National FFA president.
What most people don't realize is in the original constitution of the FFA, it said membership is open to students. It did not say male, it did not say female, it was for students. So that was a mistake, I guess, because in 1930, the FFA constitution was changed to say it was for males. And then all heck broke out in 1933. The Essex chapter of the Future Farmers of America in Massachusetts competed in the national chapter contest. They sent in a roster of their members, and the FFA discovered 5 girls on the roster. They went ballistic. The national president wrote a letter to Massachusetts saying, "You got to fix the problem." So what did Massachusetts do? Well, they said, "We don't have a problem. You have the problem."
It turns out, the Massachusetts Constitution was modeled after the original FFA Constitution, which did not discriminate against women. When the national organization changed the wording to male students in 1930, Massachusetts didn't follow suit. Over several years, Massachusetts, along with a few other eastern states, battled national FFA over the issue. Eventually, an amendment passed that directed FFA to get a ruling from the Massachusetts Attorney General.
The state director of vocational education said, "That is crazy. You will look like an idiot. There's been court cases in Massachusetts. There's policy, there's law. It has been proven time and time again in Massachusetts that females cannot be discriminated against." So in 1937, there was a constitutional amendment to the FFA. And the constitutional amendment said, in states where there is laws prohibiting discrimination, females can be members of the FFA at the state level. They cannot participate at the national level. And then things were very quiet for a long, long time, until the 60s.
The 1960s was a tumultuous period of cultural conflict and change in the United States. Agricultural education and FFA were not immune to the changes and tension that gripped the country. First, Congress passed the Agricultural Education Act of 1963.
This act was the first major vocational legislation since the Smith-Hughes Act. The Smith-Hughes Act said the purpose of agricultural education was to prepare farmers. The 1963 Act said the purpose of agricultural education is to prepare agriculturalists. And this could be people in horticulture, forestry, agricultural business, ag mechanics. So the scope of what was taught in agriculture was greatly broadened. And there was a guy at Ohio State named Earl Kantner who did a study for his doctoral dissertation on how does FFA need to change. And he sent out a survey to a whole group of people, over 300 people. But then he asked a question, should we allow girls, females, in the FFA? His question said girls. So here is the interesting results. The school principals that he surveyed said definitely we should allow women in FFA. The university professors of agriculture said definitely we should have females in the FFA. So there were three other groups. What did they say? The ag teachers, they weren't so wild about it. The state supervisors, they weren't so wild about it. And the FFA executive secretaries in each state were not wild about it.
1 year later, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which banned discrimination against any individual because of his race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The FFA policy of excluding women from national participation was now at odds with federal law.
It's not like in the 30s where Rufus Stimson was the avowed leader to let females in the FFA. In the 60s, it was a guy named William Metzger. He was the head lawyer for the Department of Education, general counsel. And he's the one that told the FFA, you must allow females in the FFA. You're violating federal law. And this was a real challenge because in order to do that, you had to change the Constitution. And it took a two-thirds vote. And who were the people voting on the change? Boys. The National FFA said, do we need to change, but how do you convince the FFA members who are all male to vote to allow females? And it came up for vote several times, and each time it was voted down. And finally, the FFA board of directors, they didn't know what to do.
By the late 1960s, several state attorney generals had ruled against FFA in their states, resulting in many states allowing women in FFA under the state law provision of the Constitution. But women were still banned from national participation.
In 68, it came up for a vote again, and it failed by 7 votes. And then it was brought up again in 69, and it passed by 2 votes. And females were finally allowed membership in the FFA at the national level.
Since 1969, female members have contributed in countless ways throughout FFA. from the first female delegates, Anita Decker and Patricia Krawicki, in 1970, to Julie Smiley, elected in 1976 as the first female national officer. From Jan Eberle, the organization's first female national president, to Brianna Hulbert, the first African-American female elected as national FFA president in 2017. In 2019, women make up 45% of FFA membership,